Comienza Conversaciones que Transforman, el podcast de Grupo Argos para conocer y profundizar en los temas que están transformando nuestra realidad en compañía de los protagonistas que lo hacen posible.
Hello, everybody. This is Iván Trujillo speaking. It is my great pleasure to welcome you to Conversaciones que Transforman, our corporate podcast where we welcome the thoughts and opinions of leaders and experts on several matters. Today, I would like to give a warm welcome to a very special guest. His name is Raj Sisodia, a distinguished professor of global business at Babson College. Raj is the co-author and co-chairman of the Conscious Capitalism Movement. His work has been highly influential in shaping other movements aimed at fostering a more human, caring, and enriching way of doing business. He has also written 11 books and over 100 academic articles. Among those books, you can find a few New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestsellers. Raj, welcome to Conversaciones que Transforman. We are thrilled to have you in our podcast today.
Thank you. I'm really happy to join you today.
Okay, Raj, to begin, I would like to ask you a bit about yourself. Why don't you tell us about your story? Who is Raj Sisodia? How did you end up studying the balance of business and social impact?
Well, so I have a somewhat unusual background, I would say. I was born in India, lived there until I was seven, and then my father had come to Canada to do his PhD, so he came back to India then, and then we moved to Barbados in the Caribbean for 2 years. He was a plant scientist looking at hybrids. And then we moved to California for 2 years, and then 1 year in Canada before moving back to India when I was 12. And then I finished my high school and did my engineering, electrical and electronics engineering, and then I went to business school and got an MBA. And then somewhat accidentally, I discovered one day a group of my friends going to the U.S. Information Agency to get GMAT applications. And I said, why do you need that? We're already doing our MBA. They said, no, we want to apply for a PhD in business.
Wow.
And I said, I didn't know you can do that. So give me 5 minutes, I'll come with you. So I ended up going with them. And the irony is, from that group of eight of us, I'm the only one who came to the U.S. to get a PhD in business. And I ended up getting a full scholarship to a few universities, ended up at Columbia University in New York, and selected marketing for my PhD because I did not like finance. And so that's kind of the accidental path I took to becoming a business academic. And then as I started to be in the PhD program and then start to teach, I realized that many of the things that we talk about, business and marketing, are things that did not appeal to me at a human level. I felt that business was very dehumanized. It's all about profits, all about using people to make as much money as possible. I don't think it served the human spirit very well. And I felt that in marketing, that we did a lot of things that were trying to just get customers to buy as much as possible, not focusing on their well-being and their quality of life, right? Simply trying to maximize, you know, the same mentality, basically, maximize sales, maximize profits. So as a consequence, we end up, I think, causing some harm to many of our customers. So over the years, my focus in terms of my research was on marketing efficiency, effectiveness, and ethics. And my conclusion was we spend a lot of money and we get very poor outcomes from marketing in terms of customer loyalty and customer trust, which was declining even as our spending was rising. And then in terms of the negative impacts on people's health and well-being, obesity and diabetes and all these kinds of things, as well as when we use women's bodies to sell products, there's an impact on the psyche of women, especially young women with eating disorders and depression and body dysmorphia. So my focus really was on how can we do it better? How can we improve? And I did a book on, does marketing need reform? And how do we change things for the better? And that ultimately led me to a project which was In Search of Marketing Excellence. And I said, how do we find a way to do marketing where we don't spend as much money and yet we have much better outcomes? Because the reality is that over time we're spending more and more money and yet customer loyalty and trust were plummeting. And a real wake-up call for me was in 2004 when we did a study on the image of marketing, and we also looked at the amount of marketing, and we found 85% of people don't trust marketing. And secondly, that year we spent $1 trillion in the U.S. on marketing, on ads, coupons, and junk mail.
Wow, that's a big number.
Yeah, and that was the GDP of India that year. And my question was, how is it possible that 1.1 billion people can live on what we spend here on ads, coupons, and junk mail? And what do we get for that, and how do we improve on it. I found for customers, for companies and society, we were not getting a lot. In fact, we're having many negative consequences. So I was looking for a better way and started that project. And soon we discovered companies that not only did customers love them and trust them, but so did their employees and so did their suppliers and communities embrace them. So they were really stakeholder oriented. And these were companies that spent less money on marketing and yet had high customer loyalty and trust. So there was a bigger story there around stakeholders. And then we found that the glue or the magnet that held all the stakeholders together and pointed them in the same direction was the sense of purpose and values. That everybody connected to these businesses identified with their purpose and resonated with their values. And that's why they chose to be employees, they chose to be loyal customers, they chose to invest in those companies. So we discovered these pillars or principles of now what we call conscious capitalism, a higher purpose beyond profit. Why do you exist? And then caring for all of your stakeholders, not just your shareholders, but employees, community, suppliers, the environment, right? And then to do that, you need conscious leaders. You need leaders who actually care about more than power and money. And you create a culture where people actually love going to work. So that's how I got onto that. And we discovered the book was called Firms of Endearment when we published it in 2007. And we found at the end that we found 28 companies that fit these four criteria. And when we did the financial analysis at the end of our research, to our surprise, we found that these companies actually outperformed the market by a significant ratio, like 9-1 over 10 years, you know?
Wow.
And we weren't expecting that. We thought they're paying their people better, they're investing in customer care, paying their suppliers better, they're paying taxes at a higher rate, investing in the community, investing in the environment. Maybe there's less money for investors, but actually there's more money for investors. So that became a powerful story. That kind of marked a turning point in my life. And I said, I want to dedicate the rest of my career and life to studying and then spreading these ideas that business can be done in a way that's deeply humanistic and caring. And that doesn't mean that you are less successful financially. Actually, they go together beautifully.
How interesting, Raj. So I have my first question. When defining conscious capitalism, what's the definition you like best to describe this idea?
Conscious capitalism is a philosophy of doing business that starts with having a higher purpose for every business, just like each of us as individuals should have our own life purpose, separate from making money, right? So there's a higher purpose. Why do we need to exist? What are we trying to do in the world that is necessary and important and people care about? And secondly, we focus on the well-being of all stakeholders for the long term, short term and long term. Right, and for that we need conscious leadership and caring culture. So that's basically the difference.
Yeah, very clear.
Higher consciousness on the four key questions: why, what, who, and how of business. Right, higher consciousness associated with each of those.
What are the differences between conscious capitalism and corporate social responsibility, if there are any, of course?
Yeah. So social responsibility basically looks at one of the stakeholders. So we talk about at least six main stakeholders: society, partners, which is your suppliers and others, investors, customers, employees, and the environment.
The environment. This is quite new.
Yes. So the acronym is SPICY. Society, partners, investors, customers, employees, and the environment, right? So society is your first stakeholder. So you have to be, what I say, socially aligned, not just socially responsible. See, socially responsible means we're not causing harm to society, right? Or we're causing at minimum harm, as little as we can, while we are making money. Yeah. And social alignment says, while we are succeeding as a business, the more we succeed, the better it is for society. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's an alignment of our business with society, as opposed to corporate social responsibility, which is like one more check or one more responsibility, almost like a tax on the business, right? So it's basically about alignment and not about adding the burden of further responsibility onto business. And likewise with sustainability, you could say sustainability, I mean, we can understand that in a narrow way about the environment or a broad way about human systems, right? But we're saying it's not just about sustaining what we're doing indefinitely or continuing that. It is actually about restoring what has already been hurt and what has already been damaged, right? So restoring to full flourishing all the systems, the human and natural systems that we are part of. So that's part of, so I would say that conscious capitalism goes beyond CSR, it goes beyond sustainability, it goes beyond shared value, it goes beyond triple bottom line, it goes beyond natural capitalism, because it is a more holistic and inclusive philosophy that incorporates all of that.
So we could say conscious capitalism is a business strategy or a business model, or we can just even say it's like a comprehensive philosophy of doing business.
Yes, it's not a strategy. You know, strategy is what's your competitive advantage and how do you make more money than your competitor? How do you outcompete them, right? Strategy is all about competition. Sometimes people look at our principles and they say, okay, we see that this results in more profits and therefore we want to adopt these principles. And I tell them, if you only do it for that reason, it probably will not work, because you have to want to do this for the right reasons. Correct. Right? So these four pillars, they are not tactics, they are tenets. So tactic is something you do in order to achieve something else. Tenet is a pillar of fundamental belief. So we believe that we should have a purpose in our life. We believe that we should actually have a positive impact on all the lives we touch, because everybody matters and everybody needs to win. Right? We believe that leadership is about how we impact. It's the stewardship of the lives that we touch, etc. So we have to believe in all of these things. So again, this is another strategy to make more money. Right? This is a fundamental rethinking of why we exist in the first place as businesses. What is the role of business in society? And this is very important to understand, because in a free society, right, in a democratic market economy society, the government is not supposed to take care of our needs, right? Unlike socialism, communism, right? Government simply provides conditions in which we can take care of each other. And we can create companies to do that. So we are here to care for each other as human beings. And companies are ways for us to do that at scale. If I start a company, I can care for 10,000. If I don't have a company, I can care for maybe 10 people. Right?
That's right.
So that's the energy behind it, right? So how do we create conditions where people can actually serve each other through businesses? Because as I said, governments are not supposed to do that in our free market system.
How to apply the principles of conscious capitalism, for instance, in a country that has high levels of inequality and communities that are constantly demanding basic social public services. The question is, should companies jump in and start solving these problems, replacing traditional government obligations? Or more clear, should business replace government for social good?
Well, no. I mean, there are certain functions that the government has to do, right? They have to create certain levels of infrastructure, right? The roads and the, you know, all the other kinds of things. And of course, public safety, as well as a rule of law and having systematic protection of property rights and enforcing contracts, etc. But beyond that, I think in countries where we do have greater challenges, you know, India is an example of a country. It's a poor country, right? Most people don't even have basic needs met. So I think in those environments, it's even more important, because there is no safety net. Right? Yeah. The government doesn't provide very much at all. So businesses can actually provide so much in those environments. First of all, they can create an environment within the company where people are paid well at the front lines, right? And the ratio of pay is more modest compared to highest pay versus average pay. You know, that's something that within the ecosystem of the company, we can create much less inequality, right? And then we can also help people in various ways deal with challenges. You know, a good example of this is a company called FIFCO in Costa Rica, which is the largest public company in Costa Rica.
What's the name of it again?
FIFCO, F-I-F-C-O. Its original name was Florida Ice and Power Company or something. They're basically in soft drinks and beer and resorts, right? But they're a company that treats all of their stakeholders well. They pay their employees well, etc. But they also found at one point that a number of their employees were still in extreme poverty, because, you know, they had fallen into some kind of trap of extreme debt and paying high interest and so forth. So they then identified the 350 families that were trapped in that way. And then they created a customized way to help each of those families get out of poverty. And they did that in 18 months, right? So they're taking responsibility to help people. Now, they're not trying to solve all of Costa Rica's challenges at a societal level, but they're doing it within their ecosystem for the people, right? And then you inspire others, and then you work with governments also to say what policy changes can happen that we bring this about. So we act as a responsible citizen of that society. I think even in Ecuador, I remember a couple of years ago I was there, and the business community had come together to create a vision of Ecuador 2030.
Yeah.
Say, you know, or 2040, I forget what the time frame was. But basically, here's our vision for society, and here's what we as a business sector can do. Not exclusively, but here's what we commit to do, and here's what we expect the government should do, etc. So again, changing the relationship with government, not about saying, can you provide conditions that are good for us to make more money, but actually, how do we partner to ultimately promote human flourishing? And I think that's the mindset that businesses need to have.
De una pista de vuelo administrada por Odinza a la pista de abrazos más grande del mundo. De millones de metros construidos con cementos Argos, a millones de familias que ven las estrellas más cerca. De 250 megavatios solares de Celsius a más de 6 millones de árboles sembrados para disfrutar un aire más limpio. De eso se trata transformar, de invertir en proyectos que cambian la vida de las personas. Grupo Argos. Inversiones que transforman.
Escuchas Conversaciones que transforman, el podcast de Grupo Argos.
Okay, so we currently live in turbulent times, specifically surrounded by a surge of social protests, social movements that demand more equality, and have opened the door to question concepts such as capitalism. What are your thoughts around this? Do you believe that adopting a conscious approach can be considered a good antidote or solution to ease this social unrest?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so capitalism and socialism, right? These are kind of these alternative poles that we keep getting drawn towards one or the other. And if you think about what capitalism does, and it promises dynamism, right? It promises innovation and change and creative destruction, as we call it, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of that that happens. So capitalism promises and delivers on dynamism. Socialism promises decency. Everybody's going to have basic needs met, there'll be a basic safety net, etc. But unfortunately, a truly socialistic system where the government controls the commanding heights of the economy, where the government owns the means of production in many industries, has not been found to be successful anywhere, right? So this idea that dynamism and decency are two things that human beings crave, and when we feel like there's a lack of decency in the capitalist side, then we go towards a socialist side, but that's not the ultimate answer, because we need dynamism. Without dynamism, we cannot survive. So we need dynamism with decency. Yep. Right, and that's what I think conscious capitalism promises. It actually promises greater dynamism than traditional capitalism, because engagement level of employees is much higher in these companies. So therefore, they are much more innovative, caring, creative, passionate, productive, etc. So you're going to get much more dynamism. And then you get true decency, which is that people are paid well, they're treated with respect and dignity, they earn what they're getting, so it's not a free handout. Right? So there's true decency there. So I think that's a fundamental thing, that the answer to this social divide of capitalism versus this debate is not going from one extreme to the other, but saying let's come up with a higher level hybrid. And I'm reminded, you know, if you go back 30 years, and the Berlin Wall came down November of 1989, right? Just over 30 years ago. And I was in Berlin actually around that time. We were having our Conscious Capitalism Europe conference. And I walked along that wall and tried to imagine what life was like 30 years ago. But if you think about what that wall symbolized and the fall of that wall symbolized was the triumph of Western-style liberal democracy, right? Capitalism, democracy, and free markets over socialism, communism, and Marxism. That was a system of enslavery and lack of freedom and living conditions for most people, right? So there was a triumph of capitalism and democracy. But now, fast forward 30 years, what we are seeing in the world is capitalism versus democracy. That somehow these two ideas, which need to go together, are starting to separate. Right, so democracy, which is about, you know, one person, one vote, you know, having power, having freedom, etc. This is now seen as somehow in conflict with the basic principles of capitalism. And that's what we need to bridge. We need to bring capitalism and democracy back together.
Do you think it's correctly to say that we're currently living in an era of post-capitalism?
We're certainly living in an era of questioning of capitalism. If you look in the last year or two, the Business Roundtable in the U.S. has issued a statement, right? Needs to be. It used to be for 40 years they were saying only economic value is the purpose of business. Now they're saying it needs to be about having a purpose, about societal well-being, and taking care of all stakeholders and thinking long-term and holistic, right? So there is a fundamental rethinking. A lot of people are asking, is capitalism dead, right? What is the future of capitalism, etc.? And new ideas and alternatives are being proposed. You know, it's like anything else. There's an evolution that needs to happen. Right? Now, with capitalism, for many people, evolution stopped. Okay, Milton Friedman and other people had these ideas, and now it needs to stop there. No, it needs to evolve as we evolve as human beings. And our consciousness is continuously elevating. See, remember, 30 years ago, or 20 years ago, gay people had no rights. Right? 30 years ago, we had apartheid in South Africa. 50 years ago, we had segregation in the US. 75 years ago, we had colonialism. 100 years ago, women didn't have the right to vote. 150 years ago, we had slavery. Right? All of those things have gone. Why? Because our consciousness is rising. And because of that, the way we think about business and capitalism also needs to evolve. Right. So that's, I think, the answer. The answer is not, we need to first of all celebrate capitalism because it has done more for humanity than any other idea we've ever had. It has lifted up billions of people out of extreme poverty. It has doubled our lifespan. It has increased our literacy. Yeah. It has done so much. And it has done all that while giving us personal freedom. Right. Yeah. So we need to celebrate, but also we need to elevate capitalism with higher consciousness. It's like if I give you, a surgeon, a scalpel, he can save your life. If I give somebody else a scalpel, he can kill you. Right? So capitalism is a very powerful tool that can do tremendous good, but can also cause tremendous harm to our environment, to our health and well-being. Right? So we need to elevate the consciousness behind how we use the tool is ultimately what makes the difference in terms of the impact. So we need to celebrate and elevate capitalism, not decimate it. Because if we don't elevate capitalism, we will decimate it. We will destroy it, and now socialism will come back. Already more than 50% of young people in the U.S. feel that socialism is a better system than capitalism.
Back to the point of the business roundtable, there was a lot of press around the manifesto that was launched proclaiming that business role is to help all of society, not just shareholders. And we're speaking about Jamie Dimon and other very prominent American CEOs from companies like JP Morgan, BlackRock, Boeing, and so on. This sounds familiar, and it seems large companies are adopting this narrative. Are we speaking about precisely of conscious capitalism?
It's very close. In fact, we had the person from Business Roundtable at our conference soon after in October, the CEO Summit, and she talked about, yes, they were definitely inspired by what we've been doing for 11 years. Our movement started in 2008, and there are other movements. There's inclusive capitalism. There's the B Corp movement, which is very powerful. There's B Team. There's Just Capital, etc. Right. So a lot of people have been seeing these and proposing, you know, different ways of thinking. So definitely, I think we've had an impact on them. And I think if I just look, you know, step back and take a look at where we were and where we have come now, I feel like a lot of these ideas are becoming mainstream. The idea of purpose, corporate purpose. You know, McKinsey, I think, is working now on that. Deloitte is working on that. All the, you know, consulting companies. Ernst & Young has a big back. You know, purpose has almost become mainstream. The idea of stakeholders. Right, is also an idea. Ed Freeman was the father of stakeholder theory at Darden, and now a lot of people are recognizing that it is silly not to consider the well-being of all stakeholders, ultimately. Yeah. And then conscious leadership. I mean, that's an idea also that is becoming very, very common. Right. So I think these are definitely major turning points. It's kind of
new narratives of business.
It is a new narrative. It's like, you know, it's what is our Berlin Wall moment? You know, when the Berlin Wall came down on November 9th, the world was different on November 10th than it was on November 8th, right? Yep. So suddenly now we've entered a new chapter of our history. And we're sort of waiting for our Berlin Wall moment. Now, was the Business Roundtable statement it? I don't think so, but I think it feels like we're getting closer to that. Because when the default mode becomes this, rather than saying profit maximization and shareholder supremacy, we say purpose and stakeholders, right? When that becomes sort of the conventional wisdom, that's our Berlin Wall moment. Now, we're not there yet in practice. We're there in language for many, but many companies are still operating with a short-term financial, you know, quarterly focus. That is still driving. That's still the driving force in the economy. But I think over time, that will change. Large companies are starting to see it and recognize that if you don't change, this is becoming a competitive necessity going forward. You know, young people are not going to want to work for a company that they see as part of the problem. Right? They want purpose and meaning in their life through their work. Right?
To that point, let me ask you something. In Colombia and the region, we live a particular juncture where the levels of public distrust toward business are growing and raising. What are we doing wrong, Raj? Are we not communicating well? In Colombia, for instance, for the first time in 25 years, the public opinion shows distrust toward business.
Is that the first time in 25 years? I thought it was a long-term thing. It was getting worse. Now, I think that is a failure of the business community, first of all, to think and act and talk about business in the right way. When business only sees its purpose as maximizing profits, right, and all of the negative externalities and consequences that flow from that, that causes, you know, nobody gets inspired when a CEO and others stand up and say, we're just going to make as much profit as possible. Then everybody says, I need to make my profit. Right? As a customer, I need to get the lowest price. As an employee, I need to get the highest pay and the least amount of work. As a supplier, I need to maximize my margin. As a society, I need to tax these people as much as possible because that's what everybody's focused on, getting as much as they can out of it. When business starts to think and talk in a deeper, richer way, and business starts to align itself with the well-being of society, right? then I think you cannot earn trust by words. You have to earn it by actions. So businesses have to come together and collectively stand for something deeper and richer that inspires people. And then they have to hold themselves accountable in a very public way to say, these are goals, this is what we're going to achieve. Again, FIFCO in Costa Rica does that beautifully. They will set public goals. They said that we want to become not only water, you know, they were negative on water, negative on carbon, negative on solid waste, right? And they said, okay, we're going to get to water neutral, carbon neutral, and solid waste neutral by this year. And then we're going to get to water positive, solid waste positive, mm-hmm. and carbon positive by this. And they made those public announcements and public goals, right? And they are now living up to that, and other people mm-hmm. are holding them accountable, right? So when you start to see people act and behave in that way and talk about business in that way, that starts to rebuild trust. And that's what we have to do. You know, we build it slowly. Trust can be lost very quickly, but it has to be built slowly. And that's what we have to do, I think, in the world of business.
So how is a conscious business precisely different from a traditional business?
Well, it follows these pillars, right? It has a clear mm-hmm. sense of purpose, which informs mm-hmm. all decision making. Every mm-hmm. decision is filtered through the lens of purpose. Is this what we are here to do? Does it serve our purpose, right? Yeah. We consciously make sure that every decision we make, we think about, even though it might be a pricing decision, and you know, it's going to impact our customers. But how is that going to impact our employees? How is that going to impact our investors? How will it? So every decision has to be looked at by saying, how does it impact all of our stakeholders? And you constantly look for the synergy and the win-win and not the trade-off.
Okay.
Right? Trade-off decisions are easy. Right, yeah. In a sense, because it says, okay, we need to make more money for our investors, therefore we're going to lay off our employees or cut their pay, or we're going to raise prices to our customers, or we're going to charge our suppliers, pay our suppliers less. Well, you've done that, but then you've achieved, you know, a negative impact on one of your stakeholders, right? And by doing that, ultimately, in an interconnected system, that is ultimately going to come back to hurt you. Because that has long-term consequences, right? What happens when employees yeah. feel disengaged and disrespected? And what happens to innovation and creativity and productivity, and errors go up and all of that? And likewise with every stakeholder, right? So we have to make sure that we are simultaneously looking for the win-win solution every single time. If anybody is losing, then we don't have the answer. Everybody has to win.
That's right.
In the company. Every single stakeholder has to win.
Totally agree, yeah.
And by the way, that's possible. You know, what it takes is human ingenuity and human creativity. And that is the one unlimited thing on this planet.
How powerful, yeah.
There's no limit to human creativity, right? Mm-hmm. But that gets engaged when people have a sense of purpose, when they feel cared for, when they feel psychologically safe. That's when human beings can do miraculous things. You know, it's extraordinary.
Speaking about the role of leaders, how can leaders lead and promote change in a company that has been traditionally successful but needs to evolve into a conscious business?
Yeah, so there are a lot of companies that look successful by depends on your definition of success, right?
Uh-huh.
So you say, okay, you have to hold a mirror up to the business. I say, okay, so our sales have been growing by 10% and our profits are this and our share price is this, okay. And first of all, how does that compare to the industry? How does that compare to the best companies in our industry? Maybe we're not as good as those. But secondly, then, okay, well, how are our employees doing? What's their level of mental, emotional, physical, spiritual well-being? What is our footprint in society? You know, carbon, water, solid waste, and other things as well, right? So that the impacts that we have. If we have to look at the totality of the whole picture to understand where we are today, and we have to create in people two things. One is a sense of dissatisfaction with the status quo. You know, this is okay, but this is not the best we can be, right? And then, as a leader, we have to paint a vision of what is possible.
Yeah.
Right? How amazing things can be, right? What extraordinary things exist. And a great leader is able to create a vision and see a vision that other people can't even imagine. So it's the pull of what could be and a sense of dissatisfaction of what is. That I think then creates the impetus, right? It's the gap between the vision and today's reality, that tension between those two things. And the leader constantly has to reinforce that, right? By constantly pointing out, you know, how good we could become, right? So it's that tension that pulls the organization along. So I think the leader's role is to play a constructive, not to sort of create doom and gloom and sense of what they call a burning platform, you know, that, oh, we better do this or we'll all die. No, but to sense, create a realistic picture of, you know, as they say, what got us here won't get us there, right?
Yeah.
And secondly, to define success not just in terms of money and, and power and money, but in terms of holistic well-being, peace of mind, flourishing, legacy, you know, reputation, impact? Can I make my children proud? You know, can I first of all make my mother happy with what I'm doing, and can I make my children proud of what I do? You know, I think those are shorthands for me.
So this has to do a lot also with corporate culture. How do we effectively cultivate, you know, conscious capitalism within our employees? What are the correct tactics, if you could call it like that, towards this purpose?
So there are some generic qualities of conscious purposes, right? So a purpose consists of a set of shared values,
okay,
and beliefs, right? And so we use the acronym TACTILE. Tactile means something you can touch and feel, although culture is generally tactile. You know, you can lift up something and hold it and feel the texture of it. Uh-huh. Although cultures are generally intangible, you can't actually smell and touch a culture.
That's right.
You can feel it. When you walk into a Southwest Airlines or a Whole Foods or a Container Store or Patagonia or REI or Wegmans or any of
you
these
feel
conscious
it, yeah.
companies, you feel the positive energy, you feel the excitement, you feel the sense of love and care that exists over there, right? So that's the acronym, but then it stands for trust, authenticity, caring, transparency, integrity, learning, and empowerment. So basically, those are some of the elements that we have to make sure that exist in our culture. What's the level of trust that people have with each other, with their leaders, right? What's the level of accountability, authenticity, right? Do we say what we mean and mean what we say? Caring is the most important one. Do people genuinely feel that this is a place of caring? Does who I am and what I do matter in this company, or am I just seen as a function or an object, right? And most companies, they don't have any caring. Most companies are places where people, there's a lot of stress. It's not love and care, but it's a lot of fear and stress that runs most companies. So we have to make sure that all of these elements are present. And then, you know, every conscious business, just like every family, is different. So you have certain values that are unique to that company, right? So Whole Foods might have certain values around food, and Container Store might have certain values around being organized, right? And Southwest Airlines might have values around fun and safety or whatever it might be. So there are some common elements, and then there's some elements that are unique. But the key thing about a culture, you have to consciously understand what culture you want to create. You have to be able to assess and measure what culture exists today, right? And then how do we change that? How do we close those gaps between the culture we have and the culture we want? And what we want is a function of what the leader's vision is, but also what our people aspire to. Right? Yeah. So because they are part of the culture, the employees are part of the culture. And there's some good tools for that. You know, there's the Richard Barrett has created the Barrett Value Center, and there's the Cultural Values Audit, which is a very simple, elegant, but very powerful way that we can assess cultures and then change those cultures over time.
Well, Raj, time is running short. It has been a truly great pleasure to have you in our podcast today. We've learned so much, really fascinating topic, and enriching to hear so many thoughts and opinions that help us understand and embrace conscious capitalism as a philosophy to leverage or sustain growth, if you could call it like that. Very honored and grateful to have you in Conversaciones que Transforman. We hope to see you and hear you soon again, Raj. Thank you very much for being with us today.
You are very welcome. I enjoyed our conversation.
Recuerden, somos lo que hacemos, y en Grupo Argos lo demostramos con inversiones que están transformando la infraestructura y el país.
Thank you very much, Raj.
Thank you.
Hasta este momento, Conversaciones que Transforman, el podcast de Grupo Argos para conocer y profundizar en los temas que están transformando nuestra realidad en compañía de los protagonistas que lo hacen posible. Nos escuchamos en la próxima emisión.